Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
104.5 The Zone, hitting the links with you on a Saturday morning. This is Talking Golf with Virgil Herring on 104.5 The Zone.
Good morning. It's time to talk a little golf, and you are listening to Talking Golf with Virgil Herring here on 104.5 The Zone. Got another great show lined up for us today. At the end of the show, we'll be heading to the Callaway Tour Van to discuss what it's like on the tour van, what's it like prepping the tour players with all of their needs. Get a little scoop on all of the new equipment that is Callaway. So that should be interesting. Kevin Napier is going to be joining us there. Stephen Yellen will be joining us at the bottom of the hour at the Orca Driving Range, as he will be offering us his mental insights to help us take our mental game to the next level. And obviously Nuge at the 15 will be writing Monday's headlines on Saturday morning. But starting us off right now, and we'll have the Orca Driving Range early today, is the Director of Instruction at Carmel Country Club and Golf Magazine Top 100 teacher. And if I sat here and listed off all of his accolades, I'd cut down on what he'd be telling us. Joining us now is Jason Sutton. Jason, how are you today, buddy?
I'm doing well. Good morning, Virgil. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Well, thank you for taking time out of your multidimensional busy life to join me. You know, Rory McIlroy breaks off of the proverbial slide, a year's worth of close calls and Sunday non-successes. I don't want to call them failures, but there were multiple times in which he donated the tournament to somebody else. But this time, there seemed to be a new Rory McIlroy in town, and you know, judging by how he has done it in the past, we could be getting ready for a really hot run from what most people believe is the most talented player on the tour.
Yeah, for sure.
So when you look at, first thing I want to talk about is his mental thing. Where he talked about, and this is a problem for everybody, including the kids and the college players that we teach, is that he is no longer associating himself with the number on a scorecard. Talk to us about what Rory McIlroy means by that and how infectious that problem is across all talent levels.
Yeah, I mean, in the simplest form, he's trying to get back to the process, you know, things he can control, you know, how he's reacting to his shots. Because you heard him really, and not get ahead of myself, but he's trying to stay out of the outcome, right? So he's trying to stay out of that. What am I going to shoot? What am I going to make on that hole? I thought it was interesting in his interview, he was talking about his poor start the last day and how he didn't let it affect him. And then when he looked at the leaderboard, he said, you know, nobody's running away from me, so I still have a chance. That tells me he's in a good place and he's not getting ahead of himself. As like you said, a lot of golfers out there, you get off to a hot start or you get off to a poor start, it can affect your round if you start thinking about outcome goals rather than process goals.
Yeah, it's a major, and expectations are the root cause of that particular cancer.
Yes.
But one of the things that I wanted to get you to discuss when it comes to his golf swing is that I don't believe in any one thing makes a golf swing that you have to do. But, you know, McIlroy has something in his beginning of his golf swing that Hogan had, Norman had, Tiger had in his elite prime, 97-ish to 2002, where he kind of has this little lateral bump off the ball to the right, and then he recenters his pivot. When you look at his golf swing, and there's a thousand things to like, what is it that you see in that transition that people could take away from? Because I think that more good players do it than they don't.
You're talking about his little trigger at the beginning?
Yeah, his little trigger where he kind of, like his entire body kind of floats right before he recenters his pivot.
Yeah, I think that's a good thing. A lot of times, you know, I know the average golfer is afraid of swaying, and it's really not a sway. It's just, it's more of a sort of a preload. I think Stinson does a little bit of that. As long as the pelvis doesn't continue to move laterally, which can contribute to a lot of the average golfers out there and their ability to rotate. I think it's a really strong move because it basically just gets him into his right side, and then he can just rotate. Like you said, he centers late, so it's not like he moves off the ball a ton. But I think it just sets him up for a really nice sequence in his transition, which I think is the highlight of his golf swing. I think his transition is beautiful. I think he's got great flow to his downswing. You know, he's definitely not hitting at the golf ball. He's hitting through the golf ball, which I think is a big, big thing that I try to teach my players is the intention is not to hit the ball. The intention is to make the golf swing move through the golf ball, which obviously can make it, you know, that's where he gets a lot of his speed. He just seems to be in a place where he's not caring as much, if that makes sense. I mean, from what I'm hearing from his interviews, he's in a really nice spot to play great golf. I think he's going to be really tough at the Masters this year.
I agree with you. Speaking of your ideas and things that you like to see in the impact to post-impact positions, what are some of the critical pieces that my listeners could glean from you when it comes to some hot spots or key points from, you know, impact to post-impact, what you like to see in the body and the arms and the club?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I'm a big fan at impact of having the torso slightly left or slightly open for a right-handed player. And I'm really big on, as you've probably been following my stuff lately, is on the trail, right? So I think the average golfers out there, when the pivot tends to stall or stop in the downswing, the right arm's going to straighten too soon, and that can affect a ton of stuff, which is sweet spot control, low point control, you know, all the things are going to create solid contact. What I've found in the best drivers of golf ball, kind of going back to Rory, is I'm seeing a lot more trail arm. The trail arm's a little bit more bent at impact and straightening late, which just requires a proper sequence, right? The torso is leading. You know, the shoulders are still relatively square, but the torso is a little bit open. And then that allows for all that whipping action, as everybody would describe as Rory's swing. But it really is the proper order or the proper sequence of the downswing. But I think the trail arm is a big, big thing that a lot of people don't pay attention to. And that's something that I really think is important. That is not a way to hit the ground properly by straightening your right arm. It's not a way to square the club face. So a lot of times when that right arm straightens too early, the wrist angles come out real early, and we get a mess at impact.
Yeah, I have found that when trying to describe that, you know, the shoulders look square because the left shoulder can round with all the weight and the forces on the golf swing. The left shoulder can round. So your sternum is, you know, if you judge it by the sternum is probably 25 to 35 degrees rotated open.
Yeah.
Not forward, but rotated open so that the left shoulder rounds. And then that right arm is bent and is releasing. You hit on a really great point, and I would love to get just a teeny bit more into detail with that right arm, is that do you believe that most people struggle because they try to hit it earlier, and that kind of makes their bodies kind of brace up for impact, or do you feel like they just don't know how to turn or get their core engaged? Where do you feel that most of it comes from?
No, I think from the average golfer, I think it comes from the club face being too open in early transition. So I think, you know, whether it's the grip, whether it's the club face is too open at the top, or what we found in good players, or really all good players, is they tend to move towards flexion in their lead wrist. Or for the average golfer out there, they're going to bow their lead wrist in early transition to strengthen the club face, which allows for the torso to start to open. It allows the sweet spot to kind of kick back behind the hands, you know, shallowing move that all good players have. I think pivots stall because the club face is too open, so they have to stall it and they have to flip it, right? So it's more of a compensation move that if they tried to move into a perfect transition sequence and the club face is too open, they'd hit it miles to the right, or they couldn't keep it on the golf course.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
So I think it's more of a they're compensating for that club face, it not in a strong enough position, you know, early transition or halfway down. And that's why, I mean, I love getting my players to do little half 9-to-3 swing drills and getting that exaggerated position where the club's behind the hands and the lead wrist is flexing a little bit, and teach them how to not hit it left from there. And I think that's probably the most valuable thing that the average golfer can learn out there, is to square it up with the proper sequence rather than flipping the right hand at it.
Yeah, no question about it. And some of those people find out that that might be their golf swing.
Right. Yeah.
Because it's not a bad way to play a little less exertion and a whole lot more solid contact.
Absolutely.
Jason, thank you so much for taking the time to come on my show. How can my listeners get in touch with your podcast and find you if they get to Charlotte and want to get their game tuned up?
Yeah, check out the podcast. It's on Apple Podcasts, you know, and all other podcast platforms. The Golf Guru Show, or you can just Google my name, Jason Sutton. They can email the show at golfguruShow@gmail.com, or they can email me at golfgurutv@gmail.com, and hit me up on Twitter or Instagram at golfgurutv, and I will love to talk golf with them.
You are one of the greatest in the country, buddy. Congratulations on Golf Magazine Top 100, and I look forward to catching up with you really soon, buddy.
Thanks, man. Appreciate you having me on.
My pleasure. All right, we return. Nuge is going to join us. We're going to write Monday's headlines on Saturday morning, so stick around. You are listening to Talking Golf with Virgil Herring here on 104.5 The Zone. Welcome back. And you are listening to Talking Golf with Virgil Herring here on 104.5 The Zone. If you'd like to get involved with the show, hit me up on Twitter. I am at Virgil Tourspin. It's at this time every Saturday morning. We write Monday's headlines on Saturday morning with the founder of Global Golf Post, Jim Nugent. Nuge, how are you today, buddy?
Virgil, good morning. Thank you for having me on today.
My pleasure. Well, before we get into this week's fantastic event, let's talk about what we would probably have expecting to talk about for the last year, which is Rory McIlroy taking his place again at the top of the golf world with probably as timely of a victory as there's ever been for a human being who's been playing so well. But that was quite a show for a guy who's not really had much success on that golf course either. It looks like Rory McIlroy is a newer version of himself, and those struggles that we saw earlier in the year were kind of maybe necessary for him to trust this new process that he has, because it looks like we might be in for one of those Rory runs heading into the major season.
You would hope so. I think that there's a general agreement that we're seeing something akin to Rory 2.0 here. An older Rory, a more mature Rory, a more thoughtful Rory, a more refined player on the golf course. And I think there's also general agreement that although someone else may be the number one player in the world at any given time, when Rory McIlroy is playing his best golf, he is the best golfer on the planet.
Yeah, I was really impressed with his, because generally speaking, especially at the Masters the last couple of years, and the British Open this past year as well, it only takes one shot to kind of get the shoulders slumped and kind of to go Captain Negativity on us. He really did a great job of both, you know, a couple different times during the tournament, withstanding some really either bad breaks or poor decisions or just a poor outcome. That's the unusual part for me that lets me know that we might be seeing something quite spectacular in 2019 from Rory.
Well, I think that's a very insightful observation, Virgil. There were times on each one of his four rounds where the wheels could have come off. And in the old days, Rory 1.0, they may well have. He started out very poorly on Sunday in the final round and coughed up the lead. And yet kept the bounce that we've all come to know, and the shoulders stayed up, and he proved to be resilient and persistent. That's a new attitude, a much better attitude than we've seen from this young man who's so uber talented. It's really quite refreshing, and you know, he's turning 30 as well very soon, and it's just part of the growth and maturation process of a really spectacular golfer.
Yeah, I'm with you. And we've talked about this before. There's another golfer trending in the exact opposite direction that we've compared him with all along. and that's Jordan Spieth. And if you could cue the air raid sirens going on right now, it is, in my opinion, it is about time to get significantly concerned about the direction of Jordan Spieth. It is looking bad and not getting any better, and all of his stats from driver to putter are preposterously bad for him. It doesn't look good at all, and I'm expecting some serious shakeups by the Masters if he doesn't get back on form at the Masters.
Well, I don't know what there is to shake up. Jordan is what he is. He's not long in an age where length has a premium. He relies on his short stick to bail him out, and that's not been performing of particular note for the last 18 months, 2 years, really. It's hard to watch because we all like Jordan just as much as we all like and admire Rory. This is hard, but this is serious. This is no longer, gee, I'm in a little bit of slump. Things aren't going the right way. There's really no part of Jordan's game that's where it needs to be. And I don't know what you change, you know. Do you fire the caddy? Do you fire the instructor? I think that my own personal observation, I have no solid reasons to think this, is that he's just become a little bit too mechanical. He's thinking too much. I think he needs just to go back to the golf course, play golf, learn to recapture the joy of just getting the ball in the hole quickly and not worry about where his driver is when he's three quarters of the way through the backswing.
Yeah, no. He doesn't always get it right, but recently Brandel Chambly put on an unbelievably awesome video display on how different Jordan Spieth's golf swing is from 2015 to now. And he's so spot on. And to me, I always have to give Cameron McCormick a lot of room here, because my guess is it's what Jordan Spieth wanted out of his golf swing, not what Cameron McCormick wanted to put in it. And I think that he, along with many others, kind of go with what's the soup of the week, which is more of a flexed left wrist, club face being a little more closed and rely on his rotation. But he forgets that his DNA isn't that guy. And they always, there's this infection out there on the tour that they have to keep on fiddling with something or constantly reinvent the wheel of their golf swing when they just need to do what Rory McIlroy did on Saturday night, which is he told his coach to leave him alone, go to the driving range and figure it out for himself. And that's one of the hardest parts for me as a teacher, is to pass on that I don't want to be the safety cord. I just want to give them the tools so that they can figure it themselves, because I'm not going to be there on the golf course. And that's what Rory did. And I think that Jordan Spieth needs to take some time and just hit some balls and figure it out for himself, because he's not incapable. He's just kind of lost in the weeds on what he thinks is important versus what he can do nervous.
Yeah, I think that's exceptionally well said, and well said by a teacher. You know, some of these guys out there, and I don't know Cameron McCormick at all, but they want to overteach. You and I both know who we're talking about. There's lots of them that, you know, it's my way or the highway. This is how you have to do it. At the end of the day, our game is one that's so much played by feel, by being in the moment, by blocking out anything, you know, all thoughts, and just doing what you've done for so long, which is putting a good swing on the ball. But I think he's standing over it with 16 different swing thoughts, and that's just no way to play golf at any level, much less the highest level.
No question about it. Well, as we shift our gears to the Valspar, there's another person who may be coming out of a place that Jordan Spieth is currently heading towards, and that's Luke Donald. Luke Donald has had a great run at the Valspar, and this is a great place for him to get it kick-started again in 2019. But for the former number one player in the world, who for many people can't believe he was number one player for 57 weeks without a major championship, this lets you know how consistent he was. Luke Donald, one shot out of the lead behind Paul Casey and Austin Cook. What's your hope for Luke Donald as he heads into the weekend and going into 2019, Nuge?
You know, I'm not objective. Luke is a friend, a great Northwestern University alum, and he's been through hell and back. He went through a period that similar to what we talked about just moments ago with Jordan Spieth, although Luke's affliction, not unusual. We've seen it happen time and again in the pro game. He wanted to get longer, off the tee. And for whatever reason, he seemed to forget that when he was the number one player in the world, he got there because he had the best short game in the world. He could get up and down from a garbage can, and there was no six-foot putt that he couldn't make at any point in time. And then he got, in addition to trying to, you know, find a new swing and get longer, he had health issues. He had some pretty severe back issues that he's still trying to come out from under. It's great to see him competing again. He's only played in four PGA Tour events in the last year. He remains a wonderful talent. This is the kind of golf course that suits him well because there's a premium on driving the ball straight, hitting the ball straight all day long. And he's won here, I think, back in 2012. So it's a nice feel-good recovery story for a guy that at one time was not only the number one player in the world, but there was one year where he was the leading money winner on the PGA Tour as well as the European Tour.
Yeah, that's one of the key little nuggets there that get lost in the shuffle when it comes to describing Luke Donald, because he was the first person to do it, and then there was a couple of other people right in a row after that, but it was mostly money earned while playing the PGA Tour, but that wasn't Luke Donald's case. Another storyline this week is this newly rustled up junior player, Akshay Bhatia, who is kind of, because he's working with one of the most famous teachers in the world, George Gankis, and he's got his own following, but he really played admirably, even though he missed a cut. But he's admitted that he's not going to play college golf and he's going to take it to professional right after the Walker Cup. What's your information on Akshay?
Well, I know a lot here because of my role with the American Junior Golf Association. He's a sweet kid. He is just a wonderful kid, highly admired, warmly thought of by all of his contemporaries, both boys and girls out on the junior circuit. But I don't think this is a good play at all. There's a wonderful old story. Those who don't read history are condemned to repeat it. And I bring that up in the context of Ty Tryon, the kid that many years ago was the next great thing, turned pro right out of high school, and nobody's ever heard of him since. This young fellow is a great player, no doubt about it, for his age group. Physically, he is described as slight. He's got so much growing up to do physically. And sometimes, as happened to Tiger Woods, his senior year of high school, you can grow real quickly, and you can grow out of your golf clubs, and you can grow out of your golf swing. I'm not in favor of this move at all. I think it's very, very short-sighted. It's not clear to me that he's going to even have a high school diploma. If it doesn't work, what do you do then? And I don't like this at all.
I think that is probably the biggest mistake that people make, is they put all of their eggs in one basket, and they miss the point that possibly the most important thing is your education. And it's so baffling to me, coming from somebody who at one point thought that I could do it in a couple of different sports at age 17. I can tell you right now, the most important thing for me was my college education. And I would have never believed that be the case at age 17. But those are the things that he needs to be hearing more of, in my opinion. And you're spot on there, sir. It makes me scared for him, because I hope that all of the eggs work out. Because if they don't, whew. Now, I know colleges will always be there, but that's a scary place to be.
You know, there's a dichotomy here. It took me a long time to understand this. Girls mature at an earlier stage than boys. And so you see the Lexi Thompsons of the world turning professional. And I've come to understand that, you know, that can work. It's not obvious. It's not every time, but that can work. There is no boy, none, zero, in the world who's not well served by at least 2 years on a college campus. And if anybody doubts that, they should call one Eldrick Tiger Woods and ask him what he thought about his 2 years at Stanford and how that changed the trajectory of his life.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. Nuge, what's Monday's headlines going to read?
You know, this is a hard one, Virgil. You got a really tough golf course. The field's not great here, although there's some good players in it. But this is a golf course that's a really varsity golf course. And you've got so many players bunched together. You know, if you're five shots back at one under, you still got a chance to win with a couple of good rounds on the weekend. So that said, to keep my losing streak completely intact, I'm going to go with Dustin Johnson. He's close enough. He's playing well. The fact that he's entered into this tournament at all after the last schedule that he's played suggests that he has a confidence about him. And so the cover of Global Golf Post on Monday simply says, DJ.
I'm with you on that. He's my pick as well. Nuge, how can my listeners get in contact with the Global Golf Post or GGP Plus?
You can get a free subscription to our Monday digital edition, Global Golf Post. We published every Monday at 7 a.m. Eastern Time. We're going to make you the smartest golfer in your foursome. And you can get a subscription to our new paid service, GGP Plus, also at globalgolfpost.com. Premium, original quality journalism that you can't find anywhere else, and no advertising. I think your listeners would love both of our products.
Absolutely, they will. Nuge, thank you so much for everything. Look forward to having you all next week, buddy.
Thanks, Virgil. Cheers.
All right, we return. We're headed to the Orca Driving Range, and we're going to get our head right with Stephen Yellen. So stick around. You're listening to Talking Golf with Virgil Herring here on 104.5 The Zone.
Nobody said it was easy.
Welcome back, and you are listening to Talking Golf with Virgil Herring here on 104.5 The Zone. So at this time, every Saturday morning, we make the turn and decide it's a better idea to go to the range, the Orca Driving Range. And today, we bring in one of the finest mental coaches in the world. You've heard me talk about him many times. He's been on the show many times. Fluid Motion Factors, Stephen Yellen. Stephen, how are you today, buddy?
I am exceptional. Thank you for asking, Virgil.
Well, thank you for coming on a busy Saturday for you to share your wisdom. One of the things that I've wanted to get your take on is Rory McIlroy's perseverance through this process of trying to stop being involved in identifying himself with the 21st number on his scorecard, but fall in love with the process of greatness. And if there's anybody that I've ever met in my life who knows how to access the true greatness in somebody, it is you. What is it that you're seeing from McIlroy's poise and maybe going through a little bit of struggles just maybe to make him confirm that he's committed to the process? And what's your take on where he's at right now mentally?
He's simplifying everything. And when you simplify everything, you stay more and more in the present. And when you don't simplify everything, obviously you get more complex, and then you're more in the future, and then you can't really access your natural talent.
Exactly. And to me, there might not be anybody on the planet that's got more natural talent to draw from. When you're speaking of how to do this, every human that's listening out there has talents. And we can discuss it through a golf platform or a life platform. Mm-hmm. When it comes to accessing your gifts, where do you like to start with people? And give us a quick little run through some critical things that everybody can do to access their greatness on or off the golf course.
Well, my favorite sentence in the program, and I think you know this because you went through it, is the money is in the bank. The money is in the bank, meaning that once you have hit enough golf balls, you have developed, it's not really correct to call it muscle memory, it's more correct to call it motion memory. And once you have hit enough shots over a period of months or years, that motion memory never goes away. And this is what golfers really, really need to understand, that they don't have to reinvent the golf swing on every shot. And right now, virtually the majority of golfers are living in a world where they feel they have to reinvent the wheel on every shot. In other words, they have to go through their checklist that I have to do this, I have to do that. If I don't do that, then this is not going to happen, and I'm going to hit it right or I'm going to hit it left. This is a very, very complex world to live in, because you feel you have to do almost something new and put your attention on something on every shot, and you don't. And the classic example of this is that if you're playing a practice round and you're in the middle of the fairway and you have a perfect lie and it's a perfect 7-iron shot and you completely miss the green with your 7-iron and you drop a ball in disgust and you just knock it 4 feet. Why? What happened on the first shot versus what happened on the second shot? Well, in the first shot, you got way ahead of yourself because you were over-anticipating what was going to happen. And therefore, you couldn't access the subtle processes in the mind to access what you already own. And the second shot is you lived in this whatever universe. And even though it sounds a little, you know, trite almost, you want to live in this whatever universe, this universe of simplicity, of silence, of wholeness, where you're not attached to the outcome. And then you can access consistently, more consistently, your money in your bank that you own.
Yeah, one of the things that I was reminded of that you coach so brilliantly is doing things to distract the conscious mind while we're in the time and the motion where you're kind of going from your pre-shot over the golf ball and you're still in the possibility of overruling your initial decision. You do great work on distracting the conscious mind so that the subconscious mind can take care of the goal that's not going to change, which is I'm going to try to hit this shot close to the hole or in, and letting it go. Talk to us about the importance of distracting the conscious mind and how that plays a huge role in you becoming the best golfer you can be.
So it's a good point, Virgil. You're not the first one to use the word distraction. And I would say that there is a deeper understanding of the process that I use. And I would call it culturing the mind to generate thoughts from a quieter place. Culturing the mind to generate thoughts from a quieter place. And the mind is like an ocean. There are surface levels of the mind, like there are surface, choppy, a lot of action levels of the ocean, a lot of dynamism. And then there are quieter levels of the ocean where it's just very quiet. It's very silent. The mind is exactly the same scheme. There are surface levels of the mind where the mind is very active and you're analyzing. And then there are quieter, softer, deeper levels of the mind. And the way that the mind-body connection is set up, in order to access what you already own, and in order to access your money in the bank, you need to generate thoughts from a quieter level of the mind. And when you do this, when you start culturing the mind to generate intentions about the swing or generate intentions about what you want to do in the swing, then you have access to deeper, more powerful levels of the body, and then the body responds. So it's not so much distracting where you're thinking of something other than golf. It's like you're training the mind to operate from that deep, quiet level.
Very good. I would say that, yeah, I guess maybe distraction is definitely not the accurate word now that you mention it like that. I guess I was maybe looking at it from a different definition of distraction, but I think that you definitely layered that perfectly, which is you're training. And at some point, maybe what you consider, what I'm considering distraction is actually change of the norm from its normal processes to a new process by, you know, maybe giving it the Pied Piper routine of giving it something else to do until you learn how to do it right. But brilliant.
And if I can just say that this is why Rory had success at the Players Championship. And this is why any golfer on the pro tour or on any level is going to have success. That if they're on the surface level of the mind, do this, don't do that, I want to get it close, don't hit it left, don't hit it right, I want to make the cut. I want to win this championship. I haven't played well in a long time in a professional tournament. If they're on that surface level of mine, it really doesn't matter how much talent they have. It is absolutely superfluous, because it's like you go, you have $10,000 in a savings account, you go to the bank and you ask, well, how much money do I can I access in my account? And the teller says, well, today you can only access $6,000. Well, you're going to get very upset. Well, what are you talking about? Oh, I have $10,000 in the bank. Well, you may have $10,000 in the bank, but you can only access $6,000 of it. And this has been Rory's plight for quite a long time now. He had all this talent. He couldn't access it. Why? Was he not practicing enough? No. Did he not believe in himself enough? No. Okay, it's tremendous confidence. This is a neurophysiological phenomenon to access your money in the bank. He was on the surface level of his mind, generating his intentions during that 1.5 seconds it takes to hit a golf ball. And because of that, he couldn't access his brilliant natural talent.
Steven, in my opinion, there's hardly anybody in the world of golf who's influenced me more in the last few years that you have than in my entire career. I can't thank you enough for taking the time to come out of your busy schedule to join me on my show. How can my listeners get in touch with your great work if they want to take their game to the next level?
Give me a call. But it's probably easier if you go to my website, Fluid Motion Golf, one word, fluidmotiongolf.com. I'd love to be able to help them access the money that is rightfully theirs.
Well, I'm looking forward to having you here in Nashville sometime very soon, so I'm just working out the processes on that. But it's an embedded goal, and it will be done.
Thank you, Virgil.
Steven, thank you, buddy.
Yeah, thank you for your kind words.
You're welcome, buddy. Have a great day, okay?
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, we return. We're headed to the tour van to see what's going on inside of Callaway's tour van with Kevin Napier. So stick around. You're listening to Talking Golf with Virgil Herring here on 104.5 The Zone.
Yes.
Welcome back. It's time to finish strong, and you are listening to Talking Golf with Virgil Herring here on 104.5 The Zone. Talking about finishing strong. Well, they start strong every year, or it seems like every year, and now they're getting ready to finish strong as well, and that is Callaway Golf. It's interesting. I've always paid attention to who's making the best equipment when they're not getting paid to play it. And when it comes to the driver right now, I think it's pretty obvious that the Epic Flash is totally dominating that world. And to talk about what it's like on the tour, give us some fitting information and keep us up to speed on what's going on with Callaway equipment is the guy who works on the tour van, the guy who puts it together for the best players in the world, Kevin Napier. Kevin, how are you today, buddy?
I'm good, sir. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Well, I'm as a personal lover of the brand and a gigantic fan of the Epic Flash Sub-Zero, I know that I'm not the only one. Talk to us a little bit about the transition from another awesome driver, which was the Rogue, to quickly everybody jumping on to the Epic Flash Sub-Zero or the regular Epic Flash. What's it been like out there, and what have you seen the players gravitate towards?
So in tour, we make a few different heads than we make on, you know, for the retail shelves, so to speak. So in tour, we make some different shapes, some different looks as far as, you know, visually, maybe open or closed, deeper face in the head. With Flash, we went back to shapes similar of the Epic, so two generations ago. With Rogue, is a little bit different shape. Still looks good, but Flash, with the success of Epic, we went back to the shapes with the success of Rogue and Epic, we went back to the shapes of Epic, and I guess listened to the tour players on what they wanted. Ball speed was there, the technology was there, but when we listen to the tour players and what they want, it's a little bit easier to kind of, you know, other brands, they have certain shapes that they like, but when a tour player looks down, has a lot of confidence in the head and the look, that translates to, I guess, more performance. So I would say it's look, I would say it's ball speed, I would say it's a combination of those two things.
Have you seen any of the players gravitate to one or two shafts that seem to be popular right now? Because what is it that you see that can the combinations, or is there just no real tangible coincidence? There's just a variety of what people like.
It's a variety of what people like. There's you're always going to have three shaft companies out there that kind of I wouldn't say dominate, but that's the most common. It's what players have grown up with, so to speak. I would say Mitsubishi, Fujikura, in the last kind of spot is kind of filled with a couple guys like maybe Aldila or UST or some of the other names, but those first two, Fuji and Mitsubishi, are strong leaders out there.
No doubt about it. Well, growing up left-handed and not having access to blades in my life, I swore that I would never not play a blade until I was no longer good enough to not play them. But the Apex Pros are so phenomenal. It is staggering. I know that Xander Schauffele plays them, but I'm sure there's others. But talk to us about what the tour players have given the feedback about that forged cavity that, in my opinion, is so spectacular. I can't get over it.
So the Apex Pro, Xander was huge in the development of that shape and that iron. Picky is not the word for him. He knows what he wants. So for that type of feedback from a player like Xander, it's huge, and it makes it easier for us, to get the shape right, to get the feel right, to get the look, the offset, the sole grind, all that stuff. I think we made three or four sets for him in progression and kind of dialed in everything part of the club. So I remember it last year, maybe around PGA in St. Louis. We built a couple sets for him, and building those, it's a little different than building, Apex Pro, regular Apex Pros. It's a machined head. These heads have gone through, several steps, CAD, testing, all that stuff. And he's telling me, Kevin, you need to grind this hole, you need to do this. I'm like, these are thousands of dollars to make. I don't know if I really want to do that. But, he knows, he's standing over my shoulder, and he knows exactly what he wants with the grind. So that set of clubs was easily developed with him in mind. And the shape really didn't change much. There's a little more offset in the retail version, but the shape, the toe, the grind, the offset, it's really honestly what Xander's playing, with a little more offset in retail, like I said. But it's an awesome club. The retail set has a cup face in the 7 down to the 3, so it gives you a little more pop there. The basic shape and club he's playing is the same one that's retail.
Interesting. Well, I know that it gained a lot of hot buzz when Francesco Molinari won at Bay Hill. Is there any ideas that kind of head would become something that would be available to the consumer in the future? And there's a slight tweak to the MB to it, but what's the scoop on Molinari's irons?
Molinari's irons was, I would say it's probably a one-off. That iron has a very particular shape, and in that some past OEMs that are not around anymore kind of, I wouldn't say patented that shape, but that was one of their staples, as far as no matter if it was a blade or a small cavity. That iron will probably be something similar to what we make the next MB, I would think. We don't, we don't try to make MBs or any of that blade. You can't change a blade too much. You can change shape a little bit, sole. You can't change it too much. So the look is still going to be there with with the Callaway, obviously, excuse me. But that will probably be something similar to the next blade. So you'll see the next blade probably in 20. Every other year you'll see a blade with us. But yeah. You'll probably see something similar to that next year.
Awesome. Well, I would imagine that as we got about a minute and a half left, I would imagine the traffic at the tour van is pretty intense, especially at the beginning of the year. Has this been the craziest year yet for you, or how would you say the traffic's been at the van on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday?
Excuse me. So traffic has been a ton this year. There's been absolutely mobs sometimes in the van, especially when it rains or something like that. Players are bored. They come in the van. So, you know, you'd think you see a little bit of a lull when it rains. Nobody's doing anything. Well, no, everybody's looking in the van, see what's new, seeing what they can try, seeing what, you know, we can build. But I have a builder from Europe, Woody, that has come over from our European team. He's over there for 10 years helping me with irons and wedges, and I'm kind of focusing on woods. But if it wasn't for him helping me build and doing a little driving this year, I don't know what I would do with 40 deep 40s full staffers this year. It's been crazy, but it's a good thing.
Wow. Really good thing. Fantastic. Well, Kevin, thank you so much for taking the time to join me on a Saturday morning. I know the weekend times are precious for you. Please pass on my best to Lacey, and I will look forward to seeing you very soon, okay?
All right, buddy. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Kevin. Thank you for making us part of your Saturday morning, because without you, there is no talking golf. For all of my guests, Jason Sutton, Jim Nugent, Steve Yellen, and Kevin Napier, thank you for making the show so special. Look forward to seeing you next week for more talk on this game we love, golf. Have a great weekend.